Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Laurie from Lead Infuser. Laurie, how are you going?
Good. How are you doing, Saul?
I'm good. I'm really good. Before we start chatting about all the different things we're going to talk about, first of all, how are you going today? And where are you speaking from today? What location in the world?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm over in Cleveland, Ohio, in the US.
Yeah. And it's what's the weather like over there today?
It's fall and it's sunny and got out for a nice walk earlier today. So leaves are falling. Almost all the leaves are off the trees. It's really pretty here, though.
That sounds really scenic. That sounds like a classic fall sort of thing that you would expect. Yeah. Usually what's the weather like there? Is it usually like most of the year round? What's it actually like?
We have four seasons here, so
yeah, like most places.
So we have a summer pretty hot, then cools off this time of year. Then we have winters too, lots of snow. Snow hasn't been as bad lately though, so it's been lighter the last couple of years, and then spring and summer again.
Yeah,
so it's nice to experience it all.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because here in Australia, it's, I mean, there's some parts that obviously snow, but it's funny how in some parts of the world, or it is to me anyway, it's obviously pretty normal for you, but like there's like more extremes in terms of like the cold part more than anything, I guess.
Yes.
It's like warm most of the year round. And anytime that we say it's cold here, and the other people who've got it really cold always think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's so cold here. Yeah.
So what's the coldest there?
Oh, in where we are in Queensland, it does get cold in some parts. Like there's certainly frost, but you don't get, that's probably the coldest that it gets is like some frost, but it certainly doesn't snow. Although apparently, I actually read an article of apparently some years ago, like 100 years ago or whatever, there was some recorded snow once, which is literally never here.
Wow.
So I don't know whether that's a real story or some troll story that someone made up and put on the internet. And then it got, it somehow got traction, but but anyway, but you know, outside of the actual, weather, what's the business weather like over in the US at the moment? Like before we start talking about, I guess, like what you do, where you are, what's like since, even though it sounds funny to say like since COVID, because it's like a few years ago now, but what's it been like for you and generally say even in your local sort of area, what's it actually been like since then?
Yeah, well, for me, a lot changed in my business. I was doing a lot of graphic design work and print design work, some print design work, some web design work. Print design work kind of stopped around that time for trade shows and different things like that. So for myself, I just ended up with lots of other entrepreneurs and kind of figuring out what to do next. And I was already on this kind of journey looking into doing more marketing for my graphic design and web design clients, and ended up really just delving into that more and more, and got more into the automation side of things because I started doing some ads, and I always think of the big picture. So I can't just run an ad and it goes nowhere. So I ended up learning more about automation and setting up follow-up automation for ads, And then that led to more automation just for my own business, because then I started reaching out to more people. So that's where I've been. And I've been with lots of people just kind of growing and changing through this time period.
And, yeah. I mean, that kind of in many ways, that's a part of what I was going to then ask you about of your, you know, I guess your origins. But it's, I find it interesting being a designer myself that does digital design and print design, that you had that kind of pivot, you know, from that, which is through, I mean, that's like a natural thing, I guess, for some people, you know, who are probably a little bit more inclined to be able to do that anyway. I know it would probably be, you know, hard, if not impossible, for other people who, you know, who are, who don't want to do that. You know, of course, that's the first thing. And then, you know, secondly, they, which I guess could, it's probably something we'll talk about a little bit later too, about people having a particular attitude to the types of tools that you're talking about, like AI and automation. Because I know, like, some people are, well, I don't know too many people that are really anti it, but I do know a number of people who, you know, kind of question the maybe even philosophically about using it, which it's like something we can talk about, because I think it's an interesting part of it. And it's certainly something that that is not going to go away anytime soon. You know, it's like it's really, especially the AI, like automation has been around for quite a while now. But I feel like this is probably somewhere we can sort of segue into even now, is that I'd like to get your thoughts on, like, automation, where, because I don't know, you know, a year count on how many years you would say automation has been around, but in one form or another, there's been, like, automated from, you know, things like MailChimp and email marketing. There's been automated sort of emails. And now, like, where you're using it, how do you, have you seen, like, in your short history of using it now, like, even in this last few years, have you seen any significant sort of shift in people's attitudes to using it overall?
I have seen people kind of wonder about it, like, if it's like the right thing to do, and the concern about AI. And I think a lot of it with the AI is it is so new. Like, it was just, you know, a lot of us have been using it in our industry for a while, for generative AI and different things like that. But for the general public, it was just November of 2022 that all of this was released with ChatGPT. So I think with many things, there is a fear around it because it's something new. We're not sure what it's going to lead to. Is, you know, hear stories of, is AI going to take over and things like that? And I think really it is just using it, understanding it. And as I used it more, I was just, like, amazed at how it actually, as a creative person, sparked more ideas. It was just kind of like made everything kind of go faster. So it, I feel like you have this creative side and it's like enhancing it. It's like turbocharging it or something like that, as far as, like, the generative AI side of things. And when you're really in it, it's different than when you're just hearing about it and it's something like, what is this? And
it is. It's very easy. I find it's probably like a lot of things. It's not just AI. It's very easy to lump something that people have a very broad, which is very broad and high level fear based, unfortunately, on, you know, generally sci-fi movies, let's face it. Like, it's based, I mean, it is. That's the only thing that really, I could think people base any logic, well, not, I was going to say logical fear, but, or illogical fear of, about something, because, of course, ChatGPT is not the Terminator, as we all know. Like, but it's not. But, yeah, I think you touched on an interesting point in that I've actually found the same thing. Like, I think it's important to view it as a tool, like as a really great tool. It's like, you know, any new enhancement. I mean, this is a big jump forward. Like it's a big leap. And I think probably more than anything, outside of the fact that there's that illogical kind of link to other things that it doesn't really relate to anyway, there's the people, you know, viewing it like they probably viewed other technology when it first came out, like a touchscreen phone, as opposed to having like a phone where they click the buttons and they're able to do these different things. And there's like, I actually remember specifically, it was really weird, even me sort of hearing myself say this, but I remember having, I think like a Nokia N95 or something, however many years ago, which doesn't seem like a long time ago, really, and thinking how great that was. And I really liked this phone, did all this research. And there was this big comparison thing online, I remember at the time, comparing the iPhone to the Nokia N95. It was like phone smackdown, you know. It was like, it was like all over the place. And of course, I got sucked into it being a potential buyer. And I had this friend, and it's weird now because like I like my smartphone and it's a great tool, like heaps of people you couldn't do without it, it seems. And I remember saying to him, and he was saying, oh, you're going to get an iPhone. I was like, no, I really don't. I was like, nah, don't like it. So I was really anti it. And at the time, and now thinking about it, I don't think I even knew why. It was just because I was so focused on this other thing. And I think that's like a key thing for new things, is that until people experience, like have the actual experience of using it, like you were saying, there'll always be a reticence on that point. Like, what do you think about that in terms of, because it seems to be everything, not just I'm not just sort of AI and to a lesser extent automation, but it's a very obvious example because I think it like just appeared seemingly so quickly and and it was so incredible. It didn't seem to be that slow transition like a lot of other things.
No. Yeah, I think because it was just like so accessible for people. It wasn't, it's available for free. They can just log on, create an account and try it out. So yeah, that's, I think, a big difference with some of the other technologies. I'm thinking, you mentioned the iPhone. I was the one that was in line to get one of their first iPhones with my friends. And like, so there were some of us like early adopters of things that get excited about things and we try it out. And I feel like with AI, I was using AI before ChatGPT was out. So it wasn't as much of a shock for me, but for others, it's just like there's some talk of this and they're like, that's not really going to happen. Next thing you know, everybody's using it. And
I've been kind of, but and the thing that then was highlighted to me sort of straight away in using, and now it seems to be sort of everywhere, like it's in Adobe tools. I was like pretty happy and I've used a fair bit with like pretty good success inside Adobe Illustrator too, to actually generate some vector art. But I found very quickly, and I think this is sort of a key point, and then sort of maybe we can talk about this, but then what you actually do with Lead Infuser too is you still actually, I found very, very quickly that like anything is you can't just go make up, like it's good with certain things, but then the more, it's like almost with everything, the more specific you are about what you want, and this includes what with this tool, like I was using it not as its own solution, but as a way to enhance other things that I'd already done. It was excellent. It was really good. It was time saving. And even then I had to, you know, tweak things a lot, but the initial sort of time saving things it did in that instance was good. And I've had used it previously to like for things like piece of writing that needs to be trimmed down to a certain word count. And then
yeah.
doing it and then going, yeah, not quite right, and then manually changing it, fitting it in again. I mean, I think that's a great use of it, like that. Well, for me anyway, it is. Like in so with what you're doing, like how do you find the – because I was quite interested in looking like on your website, the outline that you have for what you do. So can you just, I guess, tell everyone, just sort of run through generally so they've got a good idea of what it is like you actually offer, and then maybe outline like in a broad way, I guess, like how you utilize the tools, because people will be going, no doubt, like listening to this, they'll be going, well, how does it happen? Like, does it just like,
yeah,
you just like punch it in and it and then it just does it all. So can you run us through some of that, Laurie?
Yeah. So a lot of what I have on my website is about LinkedIn and email outreach. And I've used sales automation for several different sales process functions, basically. But I ended up really realizing it was a great place for it was in the beginning prospecting, because it's something that people often do in a repetitive way. So it's easy to replace those tasks. So like think of the initial outreach that you may do on LinkedIn. You may have one question or a couple sentences that you're going to send to everyone. So you're copying and pasting that, changing their name out. And that's a pretty slow process. So
you're automating it anyway yourself manually.
Yeah. So you're doing it manually. And so I think that's something how we talked about just people kind of thinking the ethical thing, thinking ethically about automation and AI. Like, is it any better that I'm manually copying and pasting than it being automated?
Yeah. I think that's a really key point, because actually that I thanks for bringing that up, because I had actually thought that as something that I was going to bring up with you too, because that just but then I had forgotten it. But then that I think that's a really important point, like to remind people that a lot of those types of things people are actually doing in their own manual automated sort of way anyway, like they're going, they've got this template, because everyone does it, let's face it, like you know everyone does that because it's time saving. So if it's time saving and you could do exactly the same thing and make it more personalized and quicker and save you time, then surely that's better, right? I mean, it should be in theory.
Yeah. And I think especially to reach more people, like we want to help as many people as we can. Once you have a solution that you know is going to help people, you want to let as many people as you know. So that's why like setting this up at scale where we can reach many people to me just makes sense. And then now that we know this is so accessible to so many people, just thinking of it business-wise, it's like you're going to have to figure it out because your competitors are going to be using these tools. So that's the thing too. So, and also another thing I really think about is it really creates more human connections. That's been my whole process through this. Like I'm talking to more people than I've ever talked to just by having some of these initial messages going out. So so we also do the email outreach as well. And that's a whole different area. It's automated, but it's different than email marketing that we have warm leads. This is kind of creating a traffic and generating leads that are interested. And so all of this, both LinkedIn and email takes a lot of a longer process to research and understand who you're talking to, just like any writing that we do. And then bringing in writers, especially when you're talking to for very specific technical industries, you want to make sure you have the right wording in there, and also really considering your audience that you're talking to and what's really, what are you doing that's really solving the problem that they have, and speaking to that in a way that makes sense and is also leading to engagement. So simply ending something with a question to get some engagement helps get a conversation going. And then that's when it's one-on-one. They're not going to automate that conversation.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, I would probably, listening to you say that too, I just sort of had a little realization perhaps that it's highly likely, I think, that when you're going through the process and say if you're the person who is doing like the email template thing, that they swap out the person's name and they do that and they sort of have a general template. I mean, I'm one of however many hundreds of thousands or millions of small business owners that do that like every day. And then that's time saving. But I would probably almost sort of argue that maybe that process that you're going through, where you're forcing yourself because of the process to actually put even greater thought and more careful thought into what you're saying, so that it sounds, authentic and it's the right wording, is better because you're putting more thought. Like the fact that there's like automation tools and other things is in some ways irrelevant, because that's like sort of saving time and doing things in a way that you would do manually anyway, but then you're still approaching it in probably an even more thoughtful way, I would think, because like you're actually, from a strategic point of view, you're going, and this leads a little bit into like a question that like that relates to sort of brand messaging, about like how much thought, say originally, when someone comes to you, and most people, I would say, it's probably true, haven't got any, they might have a brand, or they might have done some things with their brand, done some branding, but they don't, mm-hmm. they've got visual assets, et cetera, but they don't really have specific brand messaging. If they don't have that, what do you generally, do you have a specific process you go through to sort of extract that out of people, or to help them to formulate that to form a good grounding for the rest of the work that you do?
Yes. And from my background in branding as well, too, that is something I've
Yeah, I was
going to
say, you probably like do, the, yeah.
Yeah. Seeing like the brand story, making sure we have a voice that's recognizable to the public, recognize the brand is recognizable and repeatable. So we want that messaging as well to match them. But it also goes a little deeper too, because we're talking individual salespeople and how they communicate. And it's the wording, and it's also their behavior within how they follow up manually a lot. How much would we automate for this specific person, and making sure it sounds like that person, but also sounds like the brand. So all of these things come into play. And
that's a tricky balance, really.
Yeah. And then, so yeah, to get into how we do this, it is like something that we offer a dedicated success manager that continues to follow up and check in with the client to make sure that the automations are working with them, and not only working like getting engagement, but there isn't something jumping in before their follow-up or after their manual follow-up that doesn't make sense. So a lot of things come into play, but I think like what's really cool with the automation is that we do the repetitive tasks, and then we have more time for the strategy and more time for the planning and more time for making sure we get this right. And but the tools as well, we have ways to A/B test. Is this message working better than another? Is this subject line working better than another? And we actually have the data and analytics and can see it all there. It's just clear right there on a dashboard and know what's working and what's not.
That's the great thing. I mean, that's generally something that I would point that I generally make to people, especially people who are reticent about it. Well, I guess many technologies in general, or if there's forms of advertising or even things that you're doing, like one of the good things is that even if for whatever reason, like you're anti doing that, because like one, you've sort of heard these things before, and you can then sort of share maybe like other things too. People are like, well, I've done this way before and it's worked. So, and they use the if it ain't broken, I don't need to fix it thing. And I mean, there's an element of that which is true, but the fact too is that like modern technologies, having data that you can review that enables you to actually improve is generally not available in most other, more old school ways, where you just have to rely on, actual feedback from individuals. Like there's no other way to actually measure it or analyze it. So like if you really want to get into the nitty gritty of that, like that's really the best way to do it. But then the downside of that for some people is, unless they don't have someone like you or someone else to actually help them, because that sounds like a great idea, but if they don't have somebody then to go to actually translate, into English, like the actual numbers, they're like, well, this means absolutely nothing to me. Like all these numbers, like even when you look at Google Analytics or stuff, like it's hard enough for most people who even know it, like to actually wade through it all and go, yeah, so this is like, but what does that actually mean, like for me and for my business? Like, how does that translate? That sounds like it's really important, but I can't speak that language. So like, how do I, when people have you encountered that with your work, where people are like, wow, Laurie, that's really great. Thanks for all this, information, but I don't understand it. Have you had that?
Oh, well, generally talking to the client, we're really talking about the results they're getting. So how many appointments are you getting booked? How many new customers are signing up? We're looking talking more to that higher level with them and talking to them about things that I can't see, like how are the conversations going? So those are the things I talk with the clients about. That, I mentioned, the A/B testing and that's a little bit behind the scenes. They have access to it, but that's more of us looking at it as the team and saying what messaging is working, what isn't, what can we change, and just constantly improving. Like, we may have a high open rate in the emails, but we could get higher and we could get more people answering. So, and it's always changing too, because if you have something running a while, like right now, if I'm saying something about AI and it's exciting now, like months from now, there's going to be some different messaging. Everything is happening very quickly too. And I think that's a big thing that's happening with AI now, is things are moving quick and we can messaging is going to change over time. People are changing. Everything's always changing. It's just something that constantly needs some monitoring. But the beauty of it is that we'll take care of a lot of that and the analytics and data and review that and come up with better strategies and discuss it with the client, but they don't have to sit in there and look at these charts.
One makes a lot of sense, and that's generally how I guess everybody should do it. But it probably does, especially in your case, make a lot more sense, because they're most of, like you said before, like a lot of the stuff outside of like the split testing and different things are going to actually improve ultimately the end, like, thing that's actually happening, that messaging, and to, like, then the conversations they're having, things that you can't quantify, like their actual conversations, and that bit, like, afterwards that you don't necessarily have digital data on, is still has to be this human sort of element that you can't automate, and you can't you can't use sort of AI to. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting. I'm sort of split in one ways on whether I think it's an ethical question or not. Actually, like the whole using AI or not using AI. Like I'm sort of. It's weird because I feel like because I've had these conversations, like people say this and that, and you know, it's very topical, of course, because it's happened so quickly. And everyone's like, "Well, what's going on?" You know, and it's like a whirlwind, and that's happening so quickly, and everyone is, you know, thinking about Terminator, which is really silly, and then which is just like makes absolutely no sense anyway, like it's ridiculous, you know. But like the question of it of that is largely informed by fiction, like not by the facts of it just being a really good tool in my mind anyway. I mean, yeah, I understand that you know, the potential for it, like in a fantastical world, but on the ground use of these tools I think is really good. But I think like the thing that is not well, I wouldn't say not good, but not the potential for it isn't great, is its potential misuse of having a less humanized, less connection if it's misused. But I think I'm finding anyway, myself too, like just naturally, is that people and like just about everyone I've met has had exactly the same opinion in business, is they've realized very quickly after like having a go at ChatGPT or using some AI tool, if they don't give it specific information, it sprouts out some degree of nonsense, or, you know, with upon closer inspection, it's just really a super aggregator of content. Like it's drawing things because it draws things from the internet and various sources, and it has the illusion of being sort of intelligent when it's not. It's just like a super aggregator. So as long as you can sort of like see it like that and then use the tool, it's like misusing like a nail gun, is like if you're shooting the nail gun just everywhere, you're not going to build a house. It'd be like da 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 da, you know, and then. But if you're like just going, I mean, that's maybe not a super accurate metaphor, but it's not that dissimilar. It's just proper use, or good use of a tool and improper use of a tool. Like it's most people that I've talked to have realized that really quickly, that they've gone, oh, that sounds like artificial. Therefore, I have to modify it a bit, or I have to be more specific. And people very quickly realize that. Have you found that? Like with other people, when they've played around with it, that people find that out for themselves quickly?
Yeah, I feel like people, I've heard a lot of talk about that as well. Like they put something in, it doesn't come out as expected. And there really wasn't, I feel like, much thought into what they put in there. I know a lot of people are saying garbage in, garbage out. That's been the thing people are saying a lot, is that's occurring. Right. I guess like I really only know like how I'm using it, because it is like that is a different thing too. Everybody's using this individually, and how is it? I'm not sitting with next to someone else using this and seeing how they're using it. And that's kind of a different thing too. Just thinking about after 2020, more people are working from home, where maybe back in the day when I was working with a bunch of designers around me, we would all be chatting about like we're in mid journey and creating AI art and what's happening here. But
yeah, you get instant feedback. You get instant feedback loop straight away. But like I think too, like, cause then I found when like probably 99.9% of people, when they first go into any AI tool, they probably don't have a specific task to do. They're just going, oh, what can I do?
Oh, yeah.
And so that then it follows, I would imagine, that if you're, especially then if you're a little bit more impatient or you try it for the first few times and you're like, oh, that's not very good, you know, you haven't inputted, like you've just inputted, like you said, some rubbish because you don't have a specific task to quantify it against. Like you're not going, okay, I've got this goal. Like you got no goal and you're just going, like I think I did. Yeah. I did some stupid rubbish that I would usually never do. I was like, something ridiculous. And, but then when I used it in Photoshop, for some really practical, super time-saving things like extending a scene. There's like a scene that is this big. Yeah. And I had a scene of two mine workers, girl and a guy, and they were standing there with their hard hats on and there was a bunch of pipes behind them and it was cropped fairly closely. And I didn't have the original photo and I extended the canvas out and just had it fill in the rest. And it did it like perfectly. And I was like, whoa, that's incredible.
Yeah, like, that's amazing.
that's a great tool. And that's not, and it's like something that would have taken me like, you know, if I'd ever been able to do it like really properly and it just extended it. And like, to me, that's a great tool because it's not taking away any, creativity. It's like it's just a really useful task that that adds a lot of like extra value. Or like someone's, you know, some photographer has cropped a photo really closely and the client's like, oh
yeah,
I can't see my shoulder, and like you just like extend it and you add their shoulder, you know, things like that. That's like I've done that heaps of times, and that's
myself included.
Yeah, it's like absolutely brilliant, great example of a good tool. But yeah, so say like when you started doing this, like the answer might seem obvious, I guess, but I'll answer it anyway. Is that why LinkedIn? Specifically, for one of the services that you offer. Like it's obviously the world's biggest place for business, but were there any other reasons? Like, was it like how they do things that made it easier to use the AI tools within there?
Well, this is for more of the automation side too. So I think that's something we could clear up too. There is AI, the tools are built from using AI, but we're actually creating automation. And right. For those cases, a lot of the AI tools are kind of in the background, the machine learning parts of things, knowing when you hear about the algorithms and machine learning, and also what else did I think about? Like we can search for leads. We can use AI tools for that can grab data all over the place. So there's those kind of functions as well. There's AI built into lots of things we're using daily, and some of it has been around a bit and we didn't even know about it. And now it's just everyone's we've been using this a while and here it is. And but more and more it's getting used in different places. And as far as your question, I kind of got a little off track there. Your question was why LinkedIn?
Yeah, why LinkedIn? Yeah, outside of the fact that it's the biggest network for business.
Yes. So it all started with really I'm like my case study and I'm testing everything out on my business first. What happened was I was just I'm reaching out to other businesses and I mentioned how I was using doing things manually, using templates, copying and pasting. And I wanted to reach out to more people to talk about this offer that I mentioned. And I wanted to just reach out to everyone in my network. I wanted to add new connections, and I was doing everything manually. And I think that that's a good way to do things too. Like, at first do it manually and then recognize where there's something that's repetitive. So LinkedIn for me, and I'm reaching out to other businesses, it's the best place for reaching out to other businesses. Like, it's like the largest, one of the largest databases for businesses. We have the decision maker contacts are right there, and you can talk to them directly in their DMs. I feel like the magic happens in the DMs in LinkedIn, because and that's when I actually did this at scale and automated things, I was just like amazed at all the interaction I was having. And I feel like I myself even thought, I just LinkedIn, I'm just getting a lot of messages that seem like spam. They're not relevant to me. I'm just getting all these things. There's all this noise. But if you speak to the people you're talking to, it cuts through the noise and they interact. And I'm having good conversations with them as well and learning how I can help people even better. I mean, I'm not always like immediately going to sell someone, but just like, let's have a conversation about using automation and AI in the sales process and have a conversation around that. And I'm just gaining more knowledge, just talking to other business owners and seeing how they're using it. And if they are someone that's like, I actually need help with that, we'll get on a call and I'll help them out with it as well. But just to have the conversations, it's been pretty amazing. And when I realized how well it was working for my own business, that's when I added it into my program and made it a multi-channel outreach. And another thing, just saying multi-channel, it's like reaching out in various locations, like LinkedIn, I mentioned email, and even cold calling can be added as well. But it's not as cold because you're mentioning, I found you on LinkedIn and I sent you an email. I just wanted to check and make sure you got the email. So we're going in a little warmer and you have a little opening and you can say what the email is about. And then, you know, you don't have to go in. And you can just ask them if they want some more information and then carry on from there. Maybe book appointment a week or two out to talk about the information you sent. So all of these things are important to reach out in multiple places now, because everybody has access to these tools to reach out to people, some doing it better than others. But there's so much noise that now what used to be, maybe I used to hear like 7 to 12 touch points till the sale. I'm hearing a lot of people saying now it's 30 touch points. So if we think of that, it's like we could do 10 emails, 10 outreaches on LinkedIn, which could be the post that you're posting as well as the direct messages. So a combination of all of these things, calling, then adding other channels depending on the industry you're reaching out to. Instagram may be one, Twitter could be one. So adding them in over time, phasing them in too, because if you get the messaging right on one, you can repeat it in the others.
Isn't it funny? It's just like, it's really just like somebody saying to somebody else, like over and over again, like, hey, how you going? Okay. No, just like reminding them. It's just this constant. It's like when then you're busier too, because I've noticed, and I'm pretty sure this is more recent, because I look at LinkedIn a fair bit. Like, that's really the only the only thing I spend any worthwhile sort of time on in terms of social media, because everything else is just, for me anyway, it's just kind of noise. There's just too much stuff. I'm sure that's the case. That's how a lot of people probably feel too. But I've noticed a real uptake in people as soon as you connect, or like having, obviously an automated email. And my reaction, whilst I do actually read some, like if the, I can't necessarily identify why, just off the top of my head, but it's either like something I was like, oh, yeah, that's interesting, or I'll just generally check just in case it was something really important. It was like someone that I had met and they were contacting me via LinkedIn. But I've noticed a real sort of like uptake in recent times, like even over the last 6 months, maybe, of more and more people who I connect with doing that sort of stuff. So, I mean, this, I think, because everything seems to go, everything seems to go through cycles. There's sort of tools. And this is the only thing that I know is probably going to happen, because it's already happening. It happens with like every tool is people go, well, that's amazing. And then everyone's using it. And then all of a sudden everyone gets really sick of it because everyone's doing it. And then the people who ultimately cut through the noise are probably people like you who are helping other people to get back to using the tools for the tool's sake, but having proper messaging. And I find it sort of interesting that it's like someone like yourself who's a brand and designer doing it, because it's, I mean, like you probably have too, like our industry, like there's sort of designers and then there's like just digital people and then there's developers and there's marketing people and there's PR people and there's like, but there's not always, I mean, there sometimes is that not a great deal of sort of crossover between, say, like someone like yourself and then these other tools. So I find that interesting, because for the messaging side, especially with what you're offering, I think is quite important. Like that's a really important aspect to make it successful, is not just, there you go, there's a bunch of automation tools, go for your life. See what happens. I mean, it's probably going to end in tears. It's probably going to end in people going, this isn't a very good tool. And it's like, no, the tool is good. It's like the way you're using the tool, or you don't have the right, guidance, to actually do the messaging, which is why I asked before about the messaging side of it, because that's like the foundation, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So a year out from now, say in November 2024, where do you reckon like AI tools specifically like are going to be in terms of people's use and the actual manner in which people are using them in like a year from now, which doesn't sound like a long time, but at the rate at which things are going, I think it's probably going to change a
few. Yeah. I think one thing I can see coming about, I don't know if it'll be in a year or how long, is more personalized messaging for people. Mm. And even like websites can each be separate for different people. Like we have for the email marketing, there's different buckets of people. Let's say you could have different target markets within one business, and then you have different places that they are within the funnel, the sales funnel. So they're going to get different messaging at different times. I feel like everything can be personalized for that. You could go to a landing page, and the landing page is going to be for that person, and the data is all collected everywhere. So we could have data specifically for that person. I think of that a lot with like design, where I really got into accessibility and for web design. And I think like the reason I got at all these tools is I have this broad kind of background, and I've gotten into the development side of things. I'm super, super logical and creative. I always had this kind of unique combination. And sometimes I would think, should I really be a developer? But I always went, everything was about creating. So it was just using these tools like to me. Create.
It's just like me, because I'm a bit the same. Like I feel like when I was a kid, like I really wanted to be a industrial designer. Like not that I'm necessarily that good at building things, but I like the building and the technical side probably as much, maybe I like the creative side a bit more, but they're fairly even for me. Like I've always, that's kind of something that we've generally always prided ourselves on in, you know, our business is having that spread of skills. And I think that is interesting because it gives, I find, I mean, I've never probably reflected on it that much, but I've certainly found it, it helps when I'm thinking about particular sorts of things for people. It gives you a different perspective. I mean, sometimes it just makes things more confusing because you're thinking about twice as many things. But but outside of that, like it's, yeah, it's an interesting point. I think you're right. Have you seen that movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise?
I haven't seen that one.
No, it's like a really good sci-fi film. But I'm saying that because one of the really interesting things as far as future technologies that they have, they've got a bunch of cool sort of, you know, things. It's by, I think it's one of the books originally by Philip K. Dick too, who did do Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, which was Blade Runner. And but in Minority Report, there's this sort of featuring throughout. It's not like a main feature of the film, but it's in this future landscape set like in the United States, as almost like sci-fi films seem to be. But yeah, it's also all the films where like the cities get destroyed, unfortunately. But there's ads everywhere, and they're all super personalized ads. But they're like usually like he'll be walking through the street, and there's these like holograms and things that will pop up that are completely customized, and they're always like at you wherever you are. Like a normal ad, when you go past it, it'll be like, "Hi Tom Cruise, have you thought of blah 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 blah?" You know, and then, but it's like an AI, like it's a real person talking to them. And whilst that sounds fantastical, I kind of agree that that seems maybe not at that point yet, but with deep fakes and things like that, I don't think that's terribly far away considering all of that. I mean, it would just be, I think common sense would probably prevail to some extent because that could become really annoying, you know, just having everywhere you go. Like, but it's interesting because when we were talking about that just then about things being even more personalized, that popped into my head straight away because that's like the only piece of that's like the only piece of sort of fiction and pop culture and a movie that I could think of that actually has that in it. And it's everywhere. Like he's walking through the street and it'll go home and it'll go, you know, "Hi, have you heard of," I think his character's name is John, I'm somebody, I can't remember. I was like, "Have you thought about this?" And it'll be like something unrelated to something he already got. And it'd be like a follow-up email, but like this hologram, and he's just like, interestingly, in the movie, is because he's obviously doing other stuff in the movie, but he's completely, the funny thing is that he never ever looks or pays any attention to them. Like he's always just, he's like obviously in that future landscape, the exact same thing has happened to them that has happened to people now with like spam email. Is that just goes in one ear and out the other?
Yeah, and that's one thing I've thought about too, just with spam, is that if it's not relevant, it's spam. Like, but if it's, if you get a message that, if I just had an email last week that was like, how did they know I needed this person? Like, they were mentioning, like, it was a staffing firm and they actually mentioned the person I wanted to hire, and it was a little like freaky. I was like, how did this person know? They had that in the title. And I don't think that this was using any type of tools for this, for them to find that. I think that's just a common common job that people are trying to fill for, you know, they're trying to hire this type of person.
They just send it out. Yeah. It's like the other, all the other ones where they send out, like the scam ones where they send out that you owe something for on eBay when they know there's a certain percentage of people that do actually owe something on eBay and who will go, oh, that's obviously my thing. And because people don't pay attention, they just go click.
Yeah.
Yeah. It plays on the odds, on the numbers game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like if for business too, it seems like less spammy to me. Like the messages I do get seem to be answering something I need sometimes. And sometimes, sometimes I get a bunch of that are like, yeah, I'm getting a lot of these saying the same thing. And you start to just not even, you know, just scroll past those, but there's some that pop in and it's like I mentioned that one that popped in and I read it and I was like, hey, you actually could use help with this because this is pretty awesome.
Yeah. So it's good content. Content, it's good content.
Yeah. But yeah, like you mentioning it being so like specific with the name, I think that's where like people are getting into that, like, whoa, this is getting freaky. that personalized.
True. I mean, that is, I mean, that's an interesting point too, because there's kind of the whole, this is where the things, sales things and marketing and understanding of brand and everything goes through cycles of people going, it obviously has to be personalized, so I put their name. But then if you do it too much, like you have to then use common sense and expertise, like, you know, say yourself or actually reviewing things, you know, so it's got the balance between automation and what people are going to do anyway. You're just saving them time. But then if it sounds too, if you're using, it's like keyword stuffing, which like used to be a thing, and some people still do, but then they get penalized anyway, is that it might have been great for search engines, but it looks just plain weird. Like the people who, you know, there was always this, which I always found completely illogical, of people going, the keyword stuffing, but yeah, but don't you realize that at some point someone's going to read that? Like someone is not just like, the whole point of it is that a search engine reads it, but ultimately someone you want to read it. So when they read it, what do you think they're going to think? They're going to be like, yeah, it's obviously, I mean, that doesn't equate to trust. That equates to someone going, well, it's obviously like them trying to sell. I mean, there's all sorts of psychological things that go on with people. And they're like, you know, it's like the, I can't remember who said this quote. This relates to what we were saying before about spammy content and good content. It was like some quote that I should actually find who said this again, but I really like it. It was about like when people talk about how you shouldn't have you should never have the blanket rule of you shouldn't have a, you know, a long, you know, like a big long form web page. And the quote was sort of saying, there's no such thing as a page that is too long, it's a page that is too boring. You know, that it's the, it's like, because ultimately, if it's well designed and it's relevant content and it's doing some job, not long for its own sake, but like that's relevant for whatever reason, and it's not just all text and it's really hard to read and it looks terrible, because no one like, you know, starts reading straight away. They like look first. They're like, whoa, amazing, thank you. And then they start reading and then they weave down the page. And then if it's too boring, well, they're out of there. If it's not too boring, they'll stay. You know, it's got nothing to do with the fact that it's too long. Like it's, if it's too long and it's not relevant, yeah. But if it's relevant and, yeah, I mean, that's the case with everything though. Hey, like if it's relevant, then someone's probably going to stick around. And then the, you know, the metric for them well, or one of them anyway, for them not sticking around, for it not being relevant, is them not sticking around, you know. But then that's not the same with every person either.
Yeah.
Because some people are just impatient. And then, yeah. And they're just like, oh, I don't like that. I'm out of here. You know, so, but, so in, do you reckon there's, like, we sort of touched on this before, but do you think there's, like, a danger at this point in time of people in general with things like ChatGPT and other things, of people overusing it in the short term and then getting just like really sick of it? And then it, you know, it, in, have you seen like any signs of people who you've been talking to? I mean, probably a bit different with business people, because business people are usually pretty hungry for knowledge. And like willing to try new things, but have you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that came to mind, like while you're mentioning that, I don't know if it's exactly an answer to the question, but I thought about how how I have encountered some automation that isn't done well, and like even where it's and multiple messages deep going in, like it seemed like someone human responded and then all of a sudden an automation came in. And I feel like there's going to be a transition there where people are kind of evolving how they're using it. And because I think for me, as a designer, and I've been a writer too, I can put myself into the place of who I'm designing or writing for. But there's people using these tools that don't have that experience, or they're not writers, they're not designers, and they're getting I've put things in and like, this really doesn't sound good. But I know that because I have that discernment as a writer.
I think that's a really important point. Yeah.
Yeah. I've experienced some people like in the business world that I know that aren't writers, and I can see when they're using ChatGPT, like all of a sudden there's this giant post and they're not really editing as much. They just think, this really
well-written sort of, or seemingly well-written post. And I was like, that doesn't sound like you. I think you touched on something interesting there. It's this point at which people, like the overuse of tools is inevitably like always going to lead to like a few things. It's going to lead to, well, you could almost say not necessarily a misuse. That's certainly the case in some instances, but at least people's then realization, at least for a certain percentage of those people, about how that was incorrect, either through feedback from their peers or their clients or themselves or a combination, or they end up going, oh, it's not working. And then they come to someone like you, and then you're like able to some extent educate them about, you know, why those things work, that at the heart of it is just like actual good messaging, which is like, I think it's like absolutely fundamental. And it's going to be, and it's going to be, I would probably say, is like super fundamental to any future improvements of it too. Is like the technology is probably going to get better, but when large language models, about understanding, instead of like it moving, things moving from being just purely an aggregator of content to an understander and an understanding of content, because I think it's a bit of, I've heard different, you know, views on this. Like some people want to think it is intelligent. I don't. And then I've heard other people, which I'm sort of more in the camp that it's kind of the, I mean, how different is it to a lot of people? Like there's heaps of people who are able to put on a facade of intelligence, but they, you know, aren't but they actually sound sort of smarter than they are. But then you have to even go, well, what does that even mean? Like, what is it actually, you know, that's kind of a, you know, that's very, I'm subjective. It's like, does that mean you're good at maths? Does that mean like you're poetic? Does it mean you're good at art? Like, you know, it could mean any number of things, but instead of it moving these tools from like an just an aggregator of information and then spitting it out the other end with the illusion of it sounding like something, which it does.
Yeah.
As opposed to it having, I think, that missing that little, like the true, any like true difference, which would be, I think, like a quantum leap forward from where it is now, is to fill, say, the gap at which you're talking about, of like to actually be someone or something that understands like the nuances of, you know, that person. You know, it's like, I mean, maybe it's like the, maybe it's like the messaging version of, you know, when in movies or CGI, they map a person's, you know, face and then they create like a digital version of them. I mean, maybe it's like the messaging version of that, like they, which are, I guess, a lot of smartphones probably do anyway, like they map your voice, you know, they can't do that anyway, but like a more sophisticated version of that, which I don't know how I feel about that. If I think that's good or not, I think the jury's out for me. What do you reckon?
I mean, I think throughout this whole conversation, I just think of, like, as humans, we are creators and we're the ones creating things with the tool. And it's more about, we have to always remember that, like, we're the ones creating with it, not the other way around. And we still need that background and that we have in writing and knowing other people, knowing who we're speaking to, still need all these things to use the tools, know like when something comes out of that. That's the right.
Yeah, no, that's right. Like as we're, yeah, I guess like as a as we're getting towards the end of the podcast too, like as one of the I guess like talking about then people there as well, about how people are using it. Do you also as you had on your website too, about like you're doing your part and then really like the other person is obviously responding to the leads. Do you offer people like any advice or thoughts in regard to like to sync up or to have like a unified messaging with what you're doing and with how they're responding to leads? Or do you just just let them like, you know, do whatever they're going to do? Oh, you're on mute.
I'm back.
Yeah.
There's a little noise here.
Oh, no worries.
Okay. I have my little assistant around in my office, so that's why I had to unmute for a moment. So, if you don't mind, if I could just ask you a question real quick, I'll mute for a second.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I think I'm I was just saying about like you do you offer people like when it comes to what they're doing, which is them ultimately responding to leads, in order to like to sync up what you're doing in terms of what the messaging and what they do, do you talk to them at all or offer any sort of advice or thoughts generally about that, to make that, I guess, more synchronized. Or is that important?
Yes, it is important. And I do offer training and support as needed in that area. It kind of depends on the individual. If I'm dealing with a business leader, business owner is the one selling, they may need more support.
Mm.
One moment, I have we may need to wrap it up soon.
Yeah, no worries. Well, as like
or let me mute for a second.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll. In wrapping up, then I guess we'll. I said at the start, I will ask you for a relevant quote or something that you feel is that you either like or that or that you feel ties in with what we've been speaking about. What have you got for me, Laurie?
Yeah. It's funny, I had something else planned and then I changed it up to, I feel like the automation leads to more human connection. Like that's what I'm thinking of now. But I also think I wanted to add in the predictable action leads to predictable growth and predictable results. And that's something that automation can help us with because we can more predictably have messaging and outreach going out instead of just manually when I have time posting messages. And I'm not sure if you can hear him in the background.
Yeah, you can hear him a little bit. Hello.
Okay.
I think that's a great way to actually to wrap it up. And I think that's actually really relevant. Ironically too, I think yeah. That's actually, yeah. So I'll just also, ask you just before you go, what's the best way to, for people actually to get in contact and to find out more about you and, LeadIn Infuser, Laurie?
Yes. They can find me at leadinfuser.com and I'm also on LinkedIn, always watching my messages over there because I have lots of people responding to my messages that are going out. And those are probably some of the best places to reach out to me.
Thanks. And it's been, thanks so much for being on the podcast today. It's actually a really interesting conversation. And ultimately, I think it like came back at the end of all, ultimately to human connections, which is, I think, for some people, probably ironic in a way. But yeah, I think that's a great way. And have you got any parting words, anything else you'd like to share?
Since he came into the scene, I think like part of this, like it is bringing into how I started using automation was I had less time as a mom to do all the outreach. And that's how I came up with these solutions for myself. Hmm. And then I learned that even large companies with multiple sales teams, they also weren't doing prospecting or didn't have time for it because they were doing similar things as me. They building relationships with people, fostering the connections, closing deals. They're doing those tasks, and those always seem most important when you have someone, you have a call with them that day, you want to get ready for that call, and it's easy to forget the prospecting, and it's so easy for us to, reach out to someone like me that can help them too with the messaging to make sure it's all done properly, but there's something that can be automated and can continually occur while we're building those connections. No matter what we have going on in our life and business,
I think it's a great reason to use it, and I think it's a great thing ultimately to highlight is the reason for using the tools in the first place, like for business, But with that in mind, that's actually it for today, everyone. Thanks so much for listening once again to our podcast. And please leave any feedback as well as any suggestions for any topics. And thanks again for listening to the Grey's Business Podcast. And say goodbye, Laurie.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Thanks. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.